Welcome to
Theories of the Third Kind.
Welcome to Theories of the Third Kind. My name is Aaron, and I am one of your hosts. There's another host that is joining me today, Daniel Sun.
Hey guys, what's up?
Now, real quick, before we start today's episode, I just want to say that if you would like to support the show, then there's a few ways that you could do that.
One of the ways is Patreon. Each week, we release a Patreon-exclusive episode that only Patreon supporters can get access to. To sign up, it's only $5 a month, which is only 16 cents a day. Not only do you get an extra episode per week for that $5, but you also get access to our entire back catalog of past Patreon episodes.
In total, we have over 152 extra Patreon episodes, which is a lot of extra hours for your listening pleasure. Now, to see this full list of Patreon episodes, you can go to our website, theoriesofthethirdkind.com, click on the Patreon episodes tab, and it will bring up the entire list of Patreon exclusive episodes that we have previously published.
Also, today, we added another Patreon exclusive episode, which is over Wendigos, where we go over what they are, then we go into some stories and sightings, then we jump into strange facts and findings about them, and then we go into theories. So you get access to that episode, as well as all of the others, for just $5.
Now, if you can't afford a Patreon membership, but you want to help us out, then you can leave us a written review on iTunes or Spotify, and that helps us out a lot.
However, don't feel pressure to leave us one. If you don't want to, then that's fine. We just want you guys, girls, aliens, reptilians, Bigfoot, Sasquatches, Chupacabras, ghosts, Illuminati members, underground lizard people, whoever or whatever you are, to enjoy the show.
And that is the end of the announcements. So today's episode is over skinwalkers, not Skinwalker Ranch, skinwalkers, okay? So how this episode will go today is that we're going to talk about what is a skinwalker, and then we're going to go into a brief history of the Navajo, and then we're going to talk about eyewitness accounts that individuals have had with skinwalkers, and then we'll go into strange facts and findings, theories, and then of course wrap everything up with our own personal thoughts and theories. So with that being said, let's get into today's episode.
For hundreds of years, the Navajo people spoke of medicine men who secretly performed evil magic. They called them witches.
These witches were said to only come out at night. They would wear the skin of an animal and roam through the woods, looking for unsuspecting victims.
They have the ability to mimic not only the animal whose skin they are wearing, but also the voice of a loved one.
Are stories of these shapeshifters just made up as a way to control the people? Or do these creatures really exist?
This is Skinwalkers.
To start off today's topic, I want to clearly state that skinwalkers are not cryptids. They are witches, not cryptids. Now, when I say that they are witches, I'm not talking about the typical ones that you're probably thinking about. You know, the ones who ride around on broomsticks, have giant noses with warts on them, and pretty much have like a black cat hanging around. Not those. Now that we have that clarification, Dan, can you start off today's topic and tell us what skinwalkers are?
So the term skinwalker is exclusive to a native Indian tribe in the United States called the Navajo. Now, in this Navajo tribe, they have what is called medicine men. These medicine men have to learn both sides of magic within Navajo culture, essentially the good and the bad parts.
Now, the medicine men are supposed to only use the good side of magic. However, it is generally believed that while they are learning about the darker powers, some become corrupt, and they choose to secretly practice that darker side instead. So this type of medicine man is no longer considered a medicine man and is what the Navajo people call a witch.
The Navajo people believe that these witches can use their evil powers to shapeshift into coyotes or other creatures, as well as many other things. So to sum it up, the term skinwalker is what a corrupted medicine man is referred to by the Navajo.
Now, there are a lot of misconceptions about the actual Navajo beliefs on skinwalkers, and getting accurate information about them that is not embellished by the media was very, very difficult for us. What we found out is that in the Navajo culture, it is taboo to even speak of skinwalkers, so they will not talk to outsiders about them at all. They won't even talk to each other or their other tribe members about them, so it's pretty much hush-hush.
Now, the main reason the Navajo do not talk about the skinwalkers is because they do not want any type of retaliation against them. They believe that if a Navajo witch finds out that a member of the tribe gave up information about them, then that member will become the main target of that witch.
Even in the 20th century, there is still great fear in the Navajo community to speak about witches. So that is why we had to dig super deep for accurate information regarding the Navajo, witchcraft, and skinwalkers. Now, before we get deeper into talking about what we found regarding skinwalkers, we should probably talk a little bit about the history of the Navajo people, since it plays a part in today's topic. So you know what that means, Dan.
Oh, hell yeah.
Aaron and Dan's history class.
You can't be intimidated by these little ass kids, all right?
All right.
All right, everyone, sit your ass down and shut the hell up.
You heard the man. Sit down and shut your face. Should I not say that?
All right, now listen up. Today's lesson is a brief history over the Native American people of the southwestern United States, the Navajo, which, by the way, they call themselves Dene, which stands for the people.
So for us to talk about the beginning of the Navajo, we need to go back to the 14th century. Around this time, there was a large group of Native people that were just chilling up in the northwestern part of Canada and eastern Alaska.
Some of these Natives were like, "Look, it's too damn cold up here. My ass is gonna travel south and try to reach warmer weather." And everybody was like, "Yeah, that's a really good idea."
So a large group of them broke off from their current group and started walking south. Eventually, they stopped walking and settled in parts of what is now Arizona, New Mexico, Utah, and Colorado.
Over time, these Navajo people interacted with other indigenous peoples in the region, which they influenced their culture and lifestyle. So for the next 100 or so years, you had these Navajo adapting to this new environment and establishing a distinct culture, language, and pretty much a way of life.
Let's fast forward again, only 100 years or so later, you know, to the 15th and 16th century. Around this time, the Spanish had been exploring and colonizing parts of the Americas and established a presence in present-day Mexico and the southwestern United States.
Okay, so we have the Navajo just chilling while the Spanish are out there roaming the lands. Eventually, in 1629, a Franciscan missionary named Fray Benavides decided to visit the Navajo lands.
Fray went up to the Navajo and was like,
"Hey, I like what y'all are doing here. However, have y'all heard about our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ?"
Okay, maybe he didn't say that, but it was kind of the same thing.
Yeah, it kind of was. So the Spanish, they ended up colonizing parts of the Southwest near the Navajo people, and this had a significant impact on them.
The Spanish introduced horses, sheep, and new farming techniques that transformed the Navajo economy and society. It heavily influenced their culture, trade, and way of life.
Now, with all these good things that the Spanish brought, there was also some bad they brought along with them, such as diseases, which devastated the Navajo population.
Also, amongst all that, the Spanish kept trying to get the Navajos to convert to Christianity, which the Navajo refused. This attempted suppression of their sacred culture and religious practices led to moments of conflict between the Navajo and the Spanish.
Eventually, the Spanish left the Navajo alone due to more important stuff they had to take care of, like dealing with the United States.
During this period in the early 19th century, the United States was rapidly expanding westward. They had this belief that they called manifest destiny, which is where they believed that the United States was destined to spread its influence and democratic institutions across the North American continent. so they started claiming as much land as they could.
In 1836, Texas gained its independence from Mexico and was later annexed by the United States in 1845. At this point, Mexico got pissed and said,
"We do not recognize Texas' independence, and we also consider the annexation a violation of its sovereignty. Oh, also, that area between the Nueces River and the Rio Grande, that's ours."
The United States responded back and said,
"What the hell are you talking about? That's our land right there. You don't know what you're talking about."
So 1 year later, in 1846, Mexico and America went to war. This war lasted for 2 years, and in 1848, the two countries signed the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo. This treaty ended the war and gave a large amount of territories to the United States, such as present-day Arizona, California, New Mexico, Nevada, Utah, and parts of Colorado, Wyoming, Kansas, and Oklahoma.
That's a lot of land.
That's a lot of land.
So after that war, the United States started to settle in to their newly acquired territories. It was at this moment when the United States made contact with the Navajo. They were expanding, settling, and they came across them like,
"Whoa, hey, we beat y'all in a war. Y'all weren't supposed to be here."
Navajo people are like, "We're not the Spanish. What are you talking about?"
So the initial interactions between the Navajo and the United States, you know, included trading and attempts to establish peace treaties, but conflicts also arose between the Navajo and the U.S. settlers and military forces. The U.S. government sought to establish control over the Navajo lands due to them being rich in resources and viewed the indigenous people as obstacles.
At this time, many U.S. government officials and settlers started believing that the Native American tribes, such as the Navajo, needed to be, and I quote, "civilized," and become a part of American society. Now, for them to do this, the United States wanted to take control of the Navajo. They wanted to suppress their culture and religious practices and promote European-American ways of life, such as farming, and guess what? Christianity.
Now, if the U.S. government would have just chatted with the Spanish, then they would have known that this would not go over well. And it did not. There were a lot of conflicts.
Eventually, the U.S. government said, "F*** it. We are forcibly taking the land from them and putting them in camps." So in 1863, the United States Army implemented a scorched earth policy where they just went around destroying Navajo homes, crops, and livestock.
Now, the Navajo people were all gathered up, and in 1864, over 8,000 Navajo men, women, and children were forced to leave their homeland and march over 300 miles to Fort Sumner in eastern New Mexico, where a reservation called Bosque Redondo was located.
Now, to make things even worse, this took place during the harsh winter months, and the Navajo people suffered severe malnutrition and exhaustion. Many died during this march, while others succumbed to disease and starvation after their arrival at the Bosque Redondo reservation at Fort Sumner.
Now, you are probably thinking,
"Aw, the United States set up the Navajo people with a nice reservation since they took their land."
Nope, wrong. The Bosque Redondo reservation sucked ass, okay?
It did.
It had almost no food, no water, and no shelter.
Oh yeah, they got screwed over. But luckily, 4 years later, the United States started to feel a little bad about what they did. They wanted to fix their relations with the Navajo. So they got them together and they said, "Look, let's sign the Treaty of Bosque Redondo." And the Navajo was like, "Okay." Now, this treaty allowed the Navajo to return to their homeland and allowed them to establish a Navajo reservation in parts of present-day Arizona and New Mexico.
So needless to say, this treaty marked a significant turning point in Navajo history. Now, I know it didn't fully compensate or make up for what the Navajo people suffered. It still allowed them to return to their homeland and begin the process of rebuilding their communities and culture, though.
So as of today, in 2023, the Navajo Nation is the largest Native American tribe in the United States, with a population of approximately 300,000 members. The Navajo people primarily live within the boundaries of the Navajo Nation, which is a single large reservation that spans over 27,000 square miles and across the three states of Arizona, New Mexico, and Utah.
The Navajo Nation is a sovereign tribal nation within the United States and it has a unique legal relationship with the federal government.
In general, the Navajo Nation must follow U.S. federal laws that apply to the Native American tribes. Additionally, the Navajo Nation has its own police force and court system.
Also, in regards to their reservation, there's only one main reservation for the Navajo people. But there are several smaller Navajo communities and trust lands located outside the boundaries of the Navajo Nation. So that's just something to keep in mind.
And there you go. That is a short history lesson for you about the Navajo. Now we need everybody stand up and get the hell out of here so we can go back to the studio, okay?
Aaron and Dan's history class.
All right, now that the class is over, we're back in the studio and we all have an understanding about the history of the Navajo. Let's talk a little bit more about these skinwalkers.
Like we previously talked about, there are medicine men in the Navajo tribe. These medicine men have to learn good and bad magic. However, some of them end up secretly only doing the bad magic. Due to this, the medicine man is now labeled as a witch, and some of these witches are called skinwalkers.
These witches will then start to only come out at night, wearing animal skins, and they roam the night looking for unsuspecting victims. Now, with their evil spiritual powers, they also have the ability to imitate the animals whose skin they are wearing. So this means that these Navajo witches can essentially mimic any animal that they choose. They can be a cat, a coyote, a dog, a bear, whatever they want to be. However, they usually pick their skins based on the type of job they plan on doing.
For example, they will use a coyote skin for high speed, accurate sense of smell, and increased agility. But let's say they need some brute strength. They will then go with bear skin. And this is the primary reason why these Navajo witches are called skinwalkers.
Now, there is something else that is important to mention. Once these Navajo witches put on the skin of another animal to get their new abilities, they don't become stupid. They still retain their full mental capacity. So let's say a Navajo witch is super smart. When he or she changes into a skinwalker, they still carry that intelligence over to the other side with them, which makes them extremely dangerous.
Along with the new abilities of the animal skin they choose, the skinwalker will also use disease, hexes, spells. The Navajo skinwalkers also use mind control to make their victims do things to hurt themselves. And just a little knowledge nugget. But the skinwalker doesn't just target the Navajos. They target non-Navajo people as well. So pretty much anybody they want.
Absolutely. Now, when it comes to shapeshifters, in general, every culture has them. Other Native American tribes also have shapeshifters, but they do not use it for evil. These shapeshifters basically change into the shape of like a bird or a deer or pretty much whatever animal, but they're not evil.
But like we said earlier, it was very difficult to gather information on skinwalkers in general. Navajo people do not want to talk about them. A stranger asking questions about Navajo witchcraft is looking for trouble, and some of the Navajo might even believe that the stranger asking the question is a skinwalker himself and is looking for his next victim.
So that right there is what skinwalkers are. Now we are going to talk about some strange facts and findings that we came across while researching into skinwalkers and the Navajo people. So Dan, do you want to tell us about our first strange fact?
So the first strange fact and finding that we're going to talk about are examples of individuals encountering skinwalkers. When we started looking into individuals having encounters with skinwalkers, we wanted to find individuals who were either Navajo that had encounters or historical documentation of the Navajo telling stories about the skinwalkers.
So we started digging, and of course, we quickly learned how taboo the subject of skinwalkers is among the Navajo people, like we mentioned earlier. However, we started looking into historical documents, and what we found was pretty amazing. An American anthropologist in the 1920s named Clyde Cluckin had a fascination about the Navajo, especially about the witchcraft that was performed there by the Navajo people, and he wanted to document it. However, he knew that the Navajo people would be reluctant to speak with him, so he devised a plan.
Starting in 1923 until the late 1930s, Clyde would drive around, and if he saw a Navajo person walking, he would ask if they needed a ride. During that ride, Clyde would casually bring up the subject of witchcraft. Eventually, Clyde had conducted over 132 formal interviews with 93 different informants. He took those notes and used them to publish a technical paper, which was stored at Harvard University, where he was an instructor of anthropology at.
Years later, after Clyde passed away, his technical paper was scanned and turned into a book. This book is available in a PDF file format, and you could pretty much find it wherever you go online. You just go to a search engine and type in Navajo Witchcraft by Clyde K, and it will pull up. And it's a very good book. It's over 200 pages long, and I read the entire book this past weekend, and I loved it.
So it is this book where we got the documentation of the Navajo people telling their stories about what they know about skinwalkers. Now, keep in mind, when we are reading these stories are from the Navajo people. So the translation of what they are saying, it's not the best.
And I do want to say, what a brilliant idea for him to say, hey, I know they won't talk to me. Instead, I'll drive around and pick them up and ask them about their encounters. And he had a translator sitting in the back.
Wait, so there was a translator?
There was a translator in the car sitting in the back, and he'd pick the people up and just ask them questions.
I would have figured something was up if there's a translator back there ready to like translate everything I'm saying.
I think out of all the interviews he did, only 5 of them spoke English.
Oh, that would make sense, I guess, then, yeah.
Yeah. All right, so this first story we have is exclusively the Navajo person that's riding in the car with Clyde, telling him what he knows about witchcraft. This Navajo person says, and we quote, "There are places where we put dead bodies. There are people out there watching this grave. Sometimes they come near and take it. Then the dead body is gone. We look around the area, and all we see are wolf tracks. That is how we know when the witch people were near. They have been carrying the dead bodies away. I heard about this when I was young, but never believed it until I saw it myself. They only come at night. The witch people take the dead body to their hogan."
So, side note real quick, a hogan is a structure that is dome-shaped and made out of logs or stones, and then covered in mud or dirt. This hogan is used as a ceremonial place and is usually what the Navajo people live in. So yeah, back to the story.
"The witch people take the dead body to their hogan and cut their heads off. They hang the body up inside their hogan. Their hogans are full of heads of others." And that was the first story.
I'm guessing they cut the head off and hang the body upside down so it drains?
He never specified what direction they hang them up. All he stated was that the heads of the dead bodies get cut off by the witches, and then they hang the bodies up in the hogans.
Damn.
Yeah. All right, so that was the first story. Dan, do you want to tell us this second story?
Of course.
And by the way, this story and all the rest of them are exactly like the first one. They are direct quotes from a Navajo individual riding in a vehicle with Clyde, and Clyde asking him, "What do you know about witchcraft?" And this is their response.
"An old man is the boss of the witches who are weir animals. They have a meeting place, usually in the mountains in a big hollow rock. They got out of there dressed like a coyote. They sing and paint up the meeting place. They grind up blue lizards and feed it to the other people. They eat coyotes. If you see the tracks of a witch weir animal, you must never go in front of them."
And that is the second story. So apparently, there's an old man who is the boss of these skinwalkers. Because the weir animals is another name that they call the skinwalkers.
Huh.
Yeah. All right, so story number 3 starts off by saying, and we quote, "There are people who are witches and do the coyote prayer. The first thing they must do during it is they must kill their brother or sister. After the prayer, these people are not afraid of snakes, bears, and lightning. They run at night. They can run as fast as a horse. You can see the tracks of these people. Many of us have. They attack people with sticks that have bad medicine on it. You won't last 10 minutes after that. Besides the bad medicine, These witches can send a snake after you, or even make the lightning strike you. And that was the third story.
So they got Navajo Thor out there.
Pretty much, yeah. So tell us about this fourth story, Dan.
All right. There are witches who are weird animals. They run like a cat. They run around wearing a wolf skin. They are a lot around Black Mesa. They take dead people. They all meet together someplace at night, mostly in a cave. They can outrun a fast horse.
And that was the fourth story. So you could pretty much see the consistency. And it's not like all of these individuals were together in the vehicle. This was
separate.
Four different separate stories so far over multiple different years. Okay, and different individuals.
So definitely from the sound of it, as soon as they put on the animal skin, they gain the traits of that animal, like speed, strength, like they were saying earlier.
Yep.
Honestly, that's kind of badass.
It is. All right, so let's tell this last story that we have. So the fifth story goes, and we quote, "We had a bear that was bothering our crops. One night, I was at my brother's Hogan, aka home, and his dogs were barking and chasing around all night. The dogs chased something away from the Hogan. In the morning, we looked for tracks and found bear tracks.
We followed them and they went to the house of a man who was a witch. He put on a whole bear skin and then he became just like a bear. He ran like a bear. That is what those witches use. They look just like a bear or a coyote and they go and do harm to someone."
And that was the fifth story. And I just want to say, the book has around 90 to 100 more stories just like this, almost exactly the same, all of them from different people in the Navajo Nation, which all of the stories are pretty much the same, except one that we did come across that was a bit odd, that we decided to turn into its own strange fact and finding. Dan, why don't you start that off for us?
So our next strange fact and finding is a story that comes from the same documentation of the Navajo people being interviewed. Now, there is a paragraph that says, and we quote,
and by the way, this quote, same as the other ones, a Navajo person sitting in a car with Clyde telling him about witchcraft. This Navajo person says, and we quote, "We talk about witches. There are witch people around here. There is a man whose name means no hat. We think he is one of them. He did something wrong to a woman. We talked about it for a long time. There is another man who we think is a witch too. It was snowing last year and we were riding horses back to the Hogan. We saw this man in the distance singing. We ride our horses fast and then we heard a noise. Somehow, a man is coming close. We turn around, and he is right behind us. Then, this man disappeared and was right in front of us, standing in a lot of trees. This man we call Mr. Slender."
Ooh.
Okay, first of all, this account was taken in the late 20s. Maybe 1929, 1930, 1931, because all of the accounts were around that time frame. How weird, because of Slender Man, you know?
Yeah, and the Slender Man story, that was created in like 2009.
Doesn't Slender Man hide in the woods?
I believe so.
What they were saying is they were riding on horseback, and they see the man singing, and then all of a sudden the man disappears, or the man comes closer, and then he disappears and appears in front of them in a lot of trees, and they call him Mr. Slender. That is very weird. So that right there is the last story that we're going to talk about that comes straight from the people of the Navajo Nation. And like I said, you can find the other 90 to 100 interviews in Clyde K's book titled Navajo Witchcraft, which all you have to do is search that up on any search engine and type in PDF afterwards, and you can find it. It's a great read. I recommend it for anyone.
May have to read it. I don't know. I read a lot about Wendigos lately, so.
Which is our Patreon episode. Super good. I love that one.
It was a fun one.
Yeah. All right, so let's get into our next strange fact and finding. Now, before we get into that, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. All right, welcome back.
So our next strange fact and finding is about documented sightings of supposed skinwalkers in different countries. In 1685, in Ansbach, Germany, a wolf was caught preying on livestock. Many of the locals there believed that the wolf was a reincarnation of a despised town official.
Due to this, the locals pushed the wolf into a well, and then it died. After its death, the wolf's muzzle was cut off, and a mask of the town's official was placed over its face. The locals then placed a hat, a beard, and clothing on this effigy and hung it over the town while the citizens cheered. First of all, I'm not laughing at what they did to the wolf.
It's like, why they had to dress it up like the
town official?
Yeah.
Yeah, they believe, hey, that's him. That's Bob. He's back at life.
Here, I can prove it. Here's a mask of his face. Put it on the wolf. Boom, there it is. See, I told you, look, got a beard and everything. I told you it was him.
Damn, they must have really hated that town official.
They must have really did.
All right, let's go to the next documented sighting.
All right, another documented sighting of a supposed skinwalker in a different country happened between 1764 and 1766. During this two-year period, two abnormally large wolves were going into a town near central France and killing people.
In total, over 64 people died, with most of the victims being children. Now, one of the wolves was eventually killed in 1765, and it weighed in at over 130 pounds. A year later, in 1766, the other wolf was killed, and it weighed 109 pounds. Which, by the way, that's pretty typical for a wolf. Wolves can get really, really heavy in weight.
Did not know that.
Yeah.
So yeah, those are two documented sightings of supposed skinwalkers from other countries. And before we go into next strange fact and finding, I do have a bonus sighting for y'all. So as we were looking for these sightings, I came across an interesting historical document. This historical document was from the 1550 and written by Girolamo Cardano. Now, Cardano wrote down that a wolf's pizzle, aka phallus, aka penis, when dried out, minced, and eaten, is a potent aphrodisiac.
And Dan tested that out yesterday for everyone. And how did it work for you, Dan?
Oh, man, I tell you what. It's like buying a bunch of horny goat weed from like GNC or something and just downing them all. Whew.
They did absolutely nothing.
They did nothing.
Yeah, we're just kidding. Dan really didn't do that.
No, I'm not going out there chasing down wolves saying, give me that penis.
Give me that penis, wolf. Jesus. No, there's no wolves in Texas, so we don't have to worry about that.
Hey, back in Virginia, there was a guy that lived down the road that actually owned a bunch of wolves, which was illegal, but...
Yeah, it's not a good idea to own a wolf.
No.
But who am I to tell you what to do? You live your own life. If you want to own one, go for it. I'm not going to tell you that I approve, because my opinion honestly doesn't matter. You live your own life.
That's right. I already own a vicious wiener dog, so that's like a wolf right there to me.
All right, so let's get into our next strange fact and finding, which is a modern sighting of what people are claiming to be a skinwalker. Now, this is a video, and it is of someone in their car at night, and they are stopped on the road. All of a sudden, a giant wolf walks across the road slowly and goes back into the darkness. So if you want to see this video, you can just head to our website, theoriesofthethirdkind.com. Click on today's episode, and the video will be right there for you to take a look at. Have you seen this video, Dan?
I'm watching it now, and holy shit, PTSD just kicked in.
PTSD from what? Look how big that thing is. God dang. That looks like a bear. It doesn't look like a wolf. I mean, clearly it's a wolf, but it's the size of a bear. That thing's huge.
When I say that I'm like scared of werewolves, this is exactly what I saw. When it crossed the road, stood in the road, and just like looked right at my car.
When did that happen?
That was the story I told, pretty much why I have like a fear of werewolves.
Could you give us a summary of it again?
Now, before we get into that, we're going to take a quick break. It's our last one, so don't go nowhere. All right, welcome back. So it was late one night. I was heading back home.
What year?
It had to be after 2012. So I'm going to say like 2013, maybe.
What were you driving? Your Mustang?
My Mustang.
Okay, you're driving a 2006 Mustang.
Correct. And I was heading home, and the road right before my road, so So I'm like about a mile away from my house.
Pretty dark outside?
It is past midnight, so it is pitch black outside. You can't even see stars that night. And I remember turning onto this road, driving probably like 50 feet, and then all of a sudden something jumped out in the road.
Where were you at? Were you in like a farmland area? Were you in the city?
The countryside.
Okay.
And I come to a stop, and there's this big ass canine looking thing standing in the middle of the road. And it gave off such a scary vibe that, you know, I stopped in the middle of the road and just sat there staring at this thing. Like I was frozen behind the wheel.
So it was already in the road or it walked out into the road?
Walked out into the road.
Did it stop and just look at you in the headlights or did it just keep walking?
Just like this video. It walked out, turned sideways, looked at me, and then it turned towards me and just stared at me. It turned around and just like kept walking across the road.
Okay.
But yeah, that right there, the fur was not as dark, but that's exactly what I saw.
Well, if you or a loved one have witnessed something similar, send us an email to aaron@theoriesofthethirdkind.com. That's A-A-R-O-N. Or you can send it to Dan, D-A-N, @theoriesofthethirdkind.com. We would love to hear about it.
Dude, that thing's scary looking.
It is. That wolf in that video is ginormous, which a lot of people are saying that's a skinwalker.
And what sucked about my story is, after I got out the road, I drove back to the house. I sat in the car for like a couple minutes. Then as I opened the door to get out, all I saw was like eyes reflecting behind my car. And I was scared shitless because I'm thinking, oh God, I'm about to die. Find out it was my neighbor's little dog. Just like sitting there chilling.
Wow.
Like, man.
All right. So let's get into theories and discuss the possibilities of what these skinwalkers could be, okay? And if they're actually real or if they're not real. So why don't you tell us our first theory, Dan?
The first theory that we're going to talk about is called real. The theory is that the magic does exist and somehow the Navajo people and other native tribes have been able to tap into it. This magic can also be used for bad, which then corrupts the user, and they start wearing animal skins that turn them into a specific animal. And then they go around doing evil shit. Scaring Asian guys driving Mustangs.
My God. Okay. I mean, we talk about manifestation, but is that really magic? Is that considered magic?
I wouldn't consider that magic, but I mean, some people may because you're manifesting something. Magic, you can manifest stuff. So I don't know.
We'll just save our opinions till the end.
Yeah.
Okay. So we have that theory that they're real. So let's talk about this next theory, which is called story time. So this theory pretty much states that skinwalkers, aka witches, they never existed. That this was pretty much a scare tactic to control the youth from venturing out and leaving their tribe. Or it is just a mythical creature that they talk about that has played a pivotal role in their culture and all of them truly believe it, but none of them have seen one. So it's basically a way of controlling the tribe.
Keeping kids in check, making sure they don't run off in the middle of the night.
Sort of like their boogeyman.
Yeah. That I can believe. Because some of the cryptids we've done, even though this is not a cryptid, it is a witch, but some of the cryptids we've done, the evidence behind it, it really does sound like they just make up these stories to keep kids in check. It's like, don't go out in the middle of the night. Something's going to fly down, pick you up, you know, Mothman, or, oh, the chupacabra's going to get you.
Yeah. All right, so tell us about this next theory, Dan.
So this next theory is called Another Tribe. This theory is that these skinwalker witches were not supernatural or possessed any powers. Instead, it was actually another tribe nearby that was trying to scare the Navajo into moving so that this tribe could take over. So just like you said in the Wendigo episode, it could be like two members from another tribe, one on each other's back wearing like some animal skin, messing around trying to scare the Navajo people into moving away.
I could see that happening before the Long Walk, which is where, of course, the United States took the Navajo and made them walk over 300 miles and a lot of them died. Before that, they were kind of beefing not only with the Spanish who was trying to convert them, but also with other tribes in the area. I could see the other tribes creating this quote unquote mythical creature to try to scare the Navajo into leaving that area. But afterwards, I don't see another tribe doing that because they have a treaty with the United States that grants them that land. So what might have happened is just what I said. Before the treaty, before the Long Walk, the Navajo was having beef with the Spanish and other tribes. The other tribes created this mythical creature. The tribes people at that time did see something, and they passed this legend on as a part of their culture.
But then the guy, Clyde, who was interviewing these people.
These interviews were in 1929, 1930, 1931, 1932, 1933. And if you think, that whole long walk, that happened in 64. So it hadn't been that long. It would have been those people's grandparents or maybe even parents that had said, hey, we witnessed something in the forest, this witch or skinwalker.
Yeah. So I was going to say maybe those stories were more recent, but it never specified like the timing of those stories.
What are you talking about, timing of the stories?
Like when he was interviewing them, they never like said like, oh, this was this many years ago or anything like that.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It could have happened before the long walk. It was just passed down.
Yeah.
So I was thinking maybe if it was like more recent when they were given the interview.
Like in the 1900s, the 1910s, the 1920s.
Yeah. I mean, what if it's like not another tribe though, but like a, because they said like the Navajo, even though they have like the reservation, some of the Navajo people broke off and have their own little areas outside of the reservation. What if those tribe members are doing this like for more recent times, just because they're like, they're not on the reservation. Maybe they have a grudge or something.
That could be. Yeah. All right. Before we get deep into our own theories, let's talk about this last theory, which is called real animal. So this theory is that what the Navajos were witnessing was actually a real wolf or coyote they did not recognize in that area, since that type of coyote or wolf was very rare. And I know what you're thinking. What type of coyote or wolf is rare? We're going to talk about it here in a minute, okay? Just hold on. So now, is there any proof of there being a rare coyote? Well, there is an animal in South America that has markings on it that resembles foxes and wolves, but it is neither. It is an odd-looking large canine, and we do have two pictures of this creature. One picture is it just standing there looking, and then there's another picture that has a person standing next to one feeding it. And if you want to see these pictures, you can head to our website, theoriesofthethirdkind.com, click on today's episode, and they will be right there for you. This creature looks like a red fox that is walking on stilts.
100%.
And it does look like a skinwalker.
That second picture is kind of scary, just like its stance.
Those long, lanky legs. I could also see it being confused for a Wendigo.
The more modern Wendigo, yeah, possibly.
It is an odd-looking creature. I've never seen this before.
I've seen that first photo, but I don't remember where I've seen that.
This creature is located in South America. So it being the possible quote-unquote skinwalker that the Navajo witnessed, it's pretty much zero. They didn't witness this. It's not located in that area of the United States.
So it being possibly being a real wolf or coyote.
They did talk about tracks, them seeing the tracks all the time and them saying, oh, them are tracks. Those are witches. They came near our hogan. It's like animals will roam nearby regardless.
And the first story that we heard from a Navajo man that you read, that one right there, I believe, was just a wolf. Just for fact, they don't know if it actually took the body back to its like hogan or whatever, but they saw that there were wolf tracks around it. They never specified, but how deep did they bury the body? Because these animals, they'll dig up, I mean, wolves, coyotes, foxes, they'll dig up for food.
They will. And they never specified in the book how deep the graves were. So that could be a possibility.
Yeah, so like the first story, I definitely think it was just a normal wolf. They were just speculating or story passed down that the body was taken back and beheaded and whatnot.
And I'm not trying to bash the Navajo at all. This is in regards to human beings in general. When stories get passed down by human beings, they become more and more sensationalized.
Yes.
So that could be the case here somewhat.
I could tell you about me going fishing. The bass will just get bigger and bigger and bigger every time I tell the story. That's anybody, though.
Exactly. Yeah. All right. So let's get into our own personal thoughts and theories. Dan, do you believe that skinwalkers exist? And if so, are they corrupted medicine men? Are they undiscovered creatures? Are they Bigfoot's offspring? Are they chupacabras before they get mange? What are they?
Honestly, I think they're just real animals. I mean, yeah, you see some of these videos, like the one that they were driving on the road, and it was like a person walking towards the road, and then as soon as they got the road, they like started transforming or whatever.
Hold on. You think it is a real animal that's being misidentified?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's not an undiscovered real animal.
No.
A misidentified animal.
Yeah, misidentified animal.
Okay, I can kind of see that. I'm going to go with that the skinwalkers are not real, that they are just a mythical creature that is a part of the Navajo culture that has been passed down to pretty much keep the children and people kind of in check somewhat. And this is not bashing or saying that their beliefs are wrong. This is just my personal opinion, okay?
I know people are probably just like, you don't believe in the skinwalker, you think it's just some animal, but then you believe in Bigfoot. I mean, yeah. I honestly think this is just like a normal animal that's being misidentified, because you think of it being out in the woods and stuff, these animals aren't going to look amazing. I mean, some of them do, yeah. I mean, foxes kind of look nice, but you know, if they're out in the woods, they're starving and stuff like that, they're going to look scary as hell. And people are going to see them. And honestly, it could still play in a part of being story time. Say a kid sees a wolf or a coyote or something. Don't go up. It's not one of the dogs to play with. You know, skinwalker. It's going to eat you. I mean, it doesn't have to be a skinwalker. It's a wolf. It's going to eat you anyway.
Yeah, I agree. It's a way of control somewhat. But hey, like I said, our opinions are not facts. Okay, we presented you the facts earlier on in this episode, and you can take those and form your own opinion, okay? So with that being said, do you have anything else you want to add to today's episode, Dan?
I wouldn't mind being a skinwalker, a good skinwalker, though. Be able to change it to like a wolf or something.
Like a part of the town is having issues with coyotes or something, and they're like, hey, call up Dan, tell him to change into a bear and come eat these coyotes. And you're like, all right, I guess.
I mean, I wouldn't be doing stuff like that. I just want to go roam.
Oh, damn. You're no use to anybody, Dan. You said use for good. How is that for good? You're just roaming around. You ain't doing anything. You're just roaming.
Yeah, I'm not killing nobody, though. So that's good.
Well, if you or a loved one are a skinwalker, then send us an email. We'd love to hear from you. If you've witnessed one and you have proof, send us an email. We'd love to hear from you. If you are from the Navajo Nation, send us an email. We would love to hear from you.
If you want to talk about the skinwalkers.
I mean, not even if you do, I mean, not even that. If you just want to talk in general or say hi or...
or have any other passed down stories, not of skinwalkers.
Or whatever. We will keep you anonymous. But with that being said, I want to thank you for joining our episode today. That is the end of our regular topic, skinwalkers. And now we're going to move on to our on the scene. So if you are unfamiliar with our on the scene, it is where an individual goes out into the public and interviews anyone. It could be someone on the sidewalk, or it could be themselves, and gets their personal thoughts and theories about current conspiracies. Now, anyone can do this, meaning you, yes, you, the person listening to this right now. All you have to do is take your phone, press record, interview the person, make sure it's less than 2 minutes long. Make sure there is no music in the background, and make sure you're in a sort of quiet area. It doesn't have to be super quiet, but absolutely no music. We cannot play it with that. We'll get copyrighted. And then you can take that audio recording and send it to our emails, which is aaron@theoriesofthethirdkind.com, aaron@theoriesofthethirdkind.com. Or you can send it to Dan, dan@theoriesofthethirdkind.com. And make sure you put in the subject line on the scene, and we'll put it in line to play at the end of the show. All right, so for this week's on the scene, we have Scott H, and we're going to play that right now.
Karen and Dan, we're here at the mall asking random people if they've ever had sleep paralysis. Let's see what we find out. Have you ever had sleep paralysis?
No, not that I know of.
Yeah, I have narcolepsy, so I've had like sleep paralysis for many times.
You get the full-on demon?
I've had like a demonic dreams before, yeah.
Not that I know of.
Yes, I have.
You have?
Yeah.
Did you see the demon, or were you just stuck?
I was just stuck.
I have not.
No?
Sleep paralysis, no. But I actually heard it's pretty scary. I had some friends actually give me some of their actual stories about them like crying during that. So I'm like, I'm not really trying to mess with that right now, I'm gonna lie.
Yeah?
No, I have not.
No, I haven't, but my girlfriend does.
Does she get the demon too, or just stuck?
She gets the demon. She's gotten to the point where she's so used to it that she's like kind of made friends with it. It doesn't even scare her anymore.
Yeah, I have. I woke up and I was just, felt like I was paralyzed. Couldn't get up, felt like somebody was just sitting on my chest.
Yeah.
Freaked out, and then about like maybe 2 minutes later, like I was able to fling myself out of bed.
No. I think I had when I was younger, but I kind of grew out of it.
So did you have the whole demon experience or just stuck?
I'd be stuck and then like, I never like actually saw it, but like something would come and attack me and then I kind of wake up like, and then I like kind of like sweating and just like couldn't move and something would come and attack me and then I wake up and that'd be it. Yeah.
It's like, I seen a TikTok like not even that long ago, like they explain like a whole different thing. It's not like what you really think it is. It's not like a demon holding you down. It's like some other shit.
Yeah.
It's like something warning you or something you have control of. I really forgot what it was about, but it was pretty deep. It was just more than like, oh, something's holding you down, this and that.
All right. Thank you for your on the scene this week, Scott. That was a good one. I like that. He actually went out into the wild, into the mall, and interviewed individuals.
I'll give you props.
I love it. Keep them coming.
Sleep paralysis. The one the guy said, like, I don't, but my girlfriend does, and she's seen it so many times, she just became friends with it.
That's when I would run.
Yeah, I would run. Like, that's the thing it wants to do. It wants to, I think it would want to befriend you to get close to you. And then you drop your guard, you're it.
I've never had sleep paralysis before, but occasionally I'll get woken up if I've worked like a night shift in the past, or if I've just went to bed and been asleep for like an hour and somebody comes and wakes me up and I'm in the middle of my REM sleep, I'll get up, but I'll have no idea what the hell's going on. It's almost like the lights are on, but no one's home yet. My brain hasn't turned on. It is the weirdest feeling. I've had people run into my room right after I worked a night shift and I'd just gone to sleep and I was deep in REM sleep. They woke me up asking me where my wallet was because they wanted some cash or something, or like my keys so they could move my car. And I got up out of bed and I looked at them and I couldn't understand what they were saying. They were speaking normally like me and you, but my brain couldn't comprehend it and it was the weirdest feeling ever. So I ended up just putting my hand out. And they looked at me and said, why the hell are you putting your hand out? And then finally my brain turned on and then they said, give me your car keys or, you know, your money or whatever. And I just gave it to them.
That was just like, I remember when we first got here, you like passed out on the couch. You were on the one couch, I'm on the other. Like rest for a little bit, then we're going to get up, record. Got up, I went over to wake you up. You woke up, your head turned to me, your eyes were wide open staring at me, and you just stared. And I'm just looking like, you okay? And like, you just kept staring, and then all of a sudden, you didn't blink at all either. It was just a blank stare, like, lights are on, but no one's home. Finally, like, came to, just like, oh yeah, I'm good. Like, what the hell?
I don't know what that's called. If anyone else experiences that and knows what it is called, send us an email or comment on the Instagram post. I'd love to know what that is because I experience it, I wouldn't say quite a bit, but maybe like 3 or 4 times a year.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely interesting to see because like I know if I get woken up, I'm usually alert right then. I wouldn't say alert all the time because sometimes my dreams keep going and when I wake up, I think I'm in my dream, I guess, because if I get woken up abruptly, snap out of it, I'm just like, oh, what's going on?
Well, if a robber breaks into my house in the middle of my REM sleep, I'm screwed. I need to take a timeout and say, hey, hold on, timeout.
Come in there, go to rob you, then you just like open your eyes and you just stare at them and they're going to be like, this guy is fucking possessed. Because you're just going to be like staring at them like this.
Yeah, in my undies, looking at them with a full-on boner ready to go at. Anyway, all right. Thank you for your on the scene this week, Scott. And again, anyone who wants to submit one, just send it to our email, either Aaron or Dan at Theories of the Third Kind, and make sure you put on the scene in the subject line. All right. So now we're going to move on to shout outs, which again, I just want to remind everyone, we said it last week. We're going to say it again. We are going to start doing shout outs for Patreon only since we are getting so many birthday shout outs. We're just going to start doing Patreon only. But this week and next week are the last week for birthday shout outs. In April, we are starting to do only Patreon birthday shout outs. And that just makes it so that we have enough time for all the birthday shout outs. All right.
Yes, sir.
So the first birthday shout out we're going to give is to Julio T. His birthday was on March 6th. And he had a great birthday. And his dad said, hey, Julio T is the coolest kid a dad can ask for. And at Macho Man Randy Savage, happy birthday. Yeah. Happy birthday, Julio. I think it was a good one, was it? Yeah, cream of the crop. Yeah.
Nice.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Julio. All right, so our next birthday shout-out is a belated birthday shout-out that I somehow missed in my emails to Jessica Cassidy. Her birthday was on January 28th. So happy belated birthday to Jessica Cassidy.
Happy birthday, Jessica. Our next birthday shout-out goes to Michael. His birthday is on March 22nd, which was yesterday, and he would love a birthday shout-out. And also, he wants to thank Danny and Martin for recommending this podcast. So happy birthday, Michael. I hope it was a good one. And thank you, Danny and Martin, for recommending this podcast to him. We love all three of you. Kisses.
That's right. Happy birthday, Michael. Our next birthday shout out goes to Chris. His birthday is March 16th. That's already passed. So happy belated birthday. And he wants a Macho Man birthday shout out as well.
Oh, yeah, let me tell you something, Chris. You got 3 seconds, 3 seconds of playtime with me for your birthday. You! Love you. Proud of you.
Boom.
All right, so this next birthday shout-out goes to Will. He said, hey, my birthday is on March 28th, and I was wondering if I could have a Rock, as in the wrestler, The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, birthday shout-out that says, can you smell what The Rock is cooking? I can't do his voice, but I tried. Happy birthday, Will. I love you, and I'm proud of you.
Happy birthday, Will. All right, our next birthday shout-out goes to Joshua Hahn. His birthday's on March 26th, so happy birthday to you, Joshua.
Happy birthday, Joshua. All right, so this next birthday shout-out goes to Tori C. Her 31st birthday is today, Thursday, March 23rd. And she said it's been a crummy year so far with mental health, oral surgery, and her losing her sweet dog, Oliver. Dang. So I just want to tell you, happy 31st birthday, Tori. I hope it's a good one. I'm sorry about your mental health and your oral surgery. And I'm sorry about your dog, Oliver. And you know what? I love you. I am proud of you. Thank you for pushing through, getting through it. It's going to get better. Okay. Proud of you. Love you. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Tori. Love you and proud of you. All right. So this one right here is a special birthday shout out to my mom.
Oh, Miss Ninja.
That's right. I call her Mama Ninja. Her birthday is March 23rd and she turns the big 71.
Oh, Mama Ninja turning 71, but looking 21. Happy birthday from your boyfriend right here, Aaron. I hope it's going good. Dan's giving me a glare right now, but that's okay. I love you. And you know what? You raised a good son. He is a great friend and a great individual, and you did a great job. I'm proud of you. I love you. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Mom. I love you. And dude, she looks so good for her age.
She does. She looks real good. Anyway.
I'm going to dropkick Aaron after this.
All right. I got one more shout out, and this is not a birthday shout out. This is a anniversary shout out. So this anniversary shout out goes to Michael and Maria. They said they have been listening for years now, both on Patreon and regular. And their 1 year anniversary was on March 19th.
Hell yeah.
So happy anniversary. Good job making it a year in your marriage. May you have many, many more.
Yes. Congratulations. Happy anniversary. All right. I just got two normal shout outs though.
Oh, okay. Let's hear them.
All right. One is to Diego R. Shout out to him. And then the other one is to Vespertine. Shout out to you, man. He's supposedly sending me a bunch of stuff on email soon, like topic suggestions and information. So I'm looking forward to that.
Nice. Shout out to you, Vespertine and Diego.
Boom.
All right. Well, do you have anything you want to talk about, say, state, anything at all before we roll today's episode out?
If anybody's played the Diablo 4 beta.
Oh, my God. Okay, hold
on. I was going to tell the story. I was just like, let us know how like you enjoyed it.
Yeah, so Dan played the Diablo 4 beta.
Briefly,
because it killed his GPU. And apparently that was fairly common. A lot of people had GPU issues, and it killed their GPUs. So if you played the Diablo 4 beta and your GPU or computer was destroyed because of it, Send Dan an email and let him know he's not alone. He's been crying every night since then.
It was a bad ass GPU.
Yeah, it was. All right. Well, that is the end of today's episode. I want to thank you for joining us today. And again, thank you for your support. You are all amazing. Every single one of you. I love you and I am proud of you. So with that being said, Dan, you want to roll us out?
Sure will. It's okay to be out of this world with your thoughts.
Because you are not alone.